You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson and this is episode 56. Andrea is my guest today. Well, actually, Andrea was my guest yesterday because there's a funny story about this. But let me tell you a little bit about Andrea first. Andrea's dream is from 3 years ago. So she's able to look back kind of with hindsight and remember what was happening for her 3 years ago and relate the dream back to then. But as you'll discover, we have a lot of fun going deeper than that and actually take the issues in the dream right back to Andrea's childhood. So there's some wonderful aha moments for Andrea, lots of insights for everyone listening to take home, and a really deeply interesting dream. Now, I said that we interviewed Andrea yesterday, and the thing is that once Michael sat down to edit the podcast, we found that we had some quite bad interference on half of Andrea's dream. So we're not going to put your ears through the kind of crackle and pop that was going on in the background. So I'm going to pretend to be Andrea, and I asked her to email me her dream. And I'm going to read out the first part of the dream. And I think you'll probably notice when my voice stops and Andrea's recording from yesterday takes over. So I can't welcome Andrea onto the show. I did that yesterday. But here we go. Just pretend, just for the moment, just for now, that I'm Andrea. But I think I'll just do it in my accent. So here we go. Andrea's dream is called Elixir. The dream setting was a city, which, despite some tall buildings, had the feel of a small town, all dusty and worn. And the townspeople were being terrorized by a growing group of mutants, half human, half demon. The mutants were beautiful, very tall, and they each had their own superpower, a sort of evil superhero thing. So if you were to run into one of them, they would either kill you, tearing you to pieces, or capture you and transform you into one of them. I was hiding in an apartment building garage where a group of mutants gathered in a circle and talked. I hid behind a pillar or column, trying not to be seen by the demon people. Still, one of them saw me and said to the others, "What should we do with her?" Knowing that my options were either to be killed or join them, I quickly volunteered to join them. I acted as if I was very enthusiastic and excited about becoming one of them, but that was a survival tactic. I was actually very fearful. One of them said something like, "She's so small," referring to me, and then I heard no response to that. Apparently it wasn't enough of an obstacle, because the group quickly took me to their compound, or the building where they lived, to begin the process of transforming me into one of them, a half-demon, half-human being. The apartment building where they lived reminded me of a dorm. They each had roommates, and I would have a roommate too. I was going around meeting some of them and learning about how things worked in their midst. I sat on a bed as I talked to a few demon women. I asked them what their powers were. A couple told me their powers were invisibility and walking through walls. Others shared with me who they were and what their lives were like before they became mutants. I detected a great sadness in a couple of them, and it was clear to me that they really missed who they used to be, and they weren't happy to be who they were now. But they didn't state that, because such an admission could jeopardize their survival. I was told what the transformation process would be like for me. They would shave my head completely, then pour a toxic liquid or acid on my head. I think I may have referred to it as a poison shampoo. I was afraid that the poison shampoo would hurt.
Now, throughout the day, I still acted like I was very interested. I was enthusiastic about the process, about becoming one of them. But again, that was just a tactic to mask my fear. It was just a survival tactic. And I prayed really hard, you know, that God would just preserve my spirit and who I was and protect me from becoming like them. So I started volunteering to help with whatever they were doing with my own, you know, transformation process. But my intention was to delay it as much as I could. So I would take a long time to do the things that I was told to do. And, just really stretch it out and make it last a long time. Now, the head shaving, you know, episode and the shampoo thing, it took place in a room that looked like a hair salon. And there were, you know, double doors, wide doors that opened up to a terrace overlooking the city. And I walked out there on the terrace, and there were several of them gathering and just talking. And one of them saw me and seemed really surprised, like, oh, there's a human over here. What is she doing here? And he said to the others, you know, what, should we just kind of destroy her now and just tear into her now? And another said, oh, no, she's fine. She will soon be one of us. So back into the hair salon, you know, my hair was gone, my head was shaved, and the time came for the toxic liquid to be poured on my head. And I tried to get out of it by saying, you know, you would get a lot more people to join you if you made this a little more enjoyable. So how about you do away with the poison shampoo? How about we skip that part? But, you know, I wasn't able to convince them, and they decided just to go ahead and pour it on my head anyway. There was no pain, but I did pass out, and I lost consciousness for a while. Now, when I regained consciousness in the dream, we were sitting in a circle, like a circular couch of some kind, and they were all staring at me. And I was now beautiful like them. I had very long, shiny black hair, and they told me the transformation process is now complete. You are now one of us. And I asked them, you know, how come you're so tall and I stayed short? And they didn't have an answer for that. They said, you know, we don't know. We can't figure that out. But I thought to myself, I do know why. You know, I prayed so hard that my spirit would be intact and that I would be protected, that although I took some of their physical characteristics, I look like them from the outside. Deep down, I really was not like them. They told me that my superpower was, when I stretched my fingers, these huge claws would come out. They were sharp as knives. And this was so vivid that for a couple of days following the dream, I would walk around and just, without even thinking about it, I would stretch my fingers. and be kind of disappointed when claws didn't come out. Like, aw, man, that was just a dream. Okay. They told me that while I was unconscious, I had already killed people, children, in fact. But I had no emotion when they told me that. I felt, you know, I'm not responsible for that. I've been unconscious. I don't know what's going on. Then they sent me to a class where I would learn to master my powers, and I would also learn how to attract and seduce and gain people's trust with the intent to kill them. We were given packets or boxes containing books. Those are our learning materials. And on each of the packets, our code name was printed on them. You know, like superheroes have their own names. The name given to me was Elixir. And I'll tell you later what that means to me.
Yeah.
Then we were, it was like a classroom setting. And we were shown some religious holidays on the big screen, and we were told that we were not allowed to attack people on those dates because our powers would weaken, and so just don't do anything on those dates. Now, it was clear to me that if I were to stay alive and just survive in that environment, I was expected to hunt and kill on a regular basis. So I reasoned that, you know, I really don't want to hurt people, especially good people. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look for the worst criminals I can find, the people who really deserve it, and that's who I'm going to go after. So later, and this is the last scene I remember on the dream, I was at a bookstore, and I was just kind of looking for my first victim, just kind of hunting. And there was this man who was making eye contact and just sort of flirting with his eyes, and I remember thinking, you know, that would be really easy to capture this one. But, you know, I'm really bored with this. I'm just not interested in doing this at all. So forget this. I'm just going to leave. So I just left the bookstore, and that was the end of the dream. So there were some elements that repeated in future dreams, but that was the end of this one.
Wow. That's a huge one. What a stunner. No wonder you've remembered that after 3 years. At the end of the dream, Andrea, when you said, oh, you know, basically it would be easy to get this one, but you know, I'm bored. I'm out of here. What kind of personality was that man at the end? What, you know, because was he one of the kind of ultra wicked people that you were thinking you would go for, or was he just an everyday kind of person?
just an everyday person, seemed a little dorky to me. just somebody that I probably would not have a whole lot in common, actually. Just a regular guy, you know, dark curly hair and a little heavy, perhaps. Just an everyday person.
Okay. And when you say dorky people, are dorky people usually boring people?
Not necessarily. Dorky people can be very intelligent, very, very brainy.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I was just relating to you saying, oh, look, I'm bored with this. I'm out of here. So I was trying to find a connection there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Okay. Now, that's all good. Now, you mentioned the name Elixir or Elixir?
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. No, you said you would give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah. You know, that's an old word that means medicine, basically. But when I was little, I got stomach aches a lot. And my grandmother gave me this medicine all the time that had the name Elixir on it. And I still can taste that thing. And to me, it tastes just like root beer or black jelly beans. And to this day, I cannot taste root beer or black jelly beans because I have so much of that medicine.
And what was wrong with you as a child? Was that just for general tummy aches, or did you have a specific recurring problem?
I think they were general tummy aches. I never really thought much about it. But now that we're talking, it seems the only time that it happened and that I took that medicine was at my grandmother's house, or at least she was the only one who gave that to me.
All right. So you probably only had tummy aches when you were at your grandmother's house? You're saying?
It seems that way. That seems kind of odd to think about it that way now, but yeah, I only remember having them at her house.
Okay. Well, the reason I want to go in and explore this before making any comments on the dream at all is that we've got the Elixir, which was your kind of anointed name, and you had the anointing in the dream with the kind of the toxic shampoo. Yeah, so, you know, an elixir is often like an oil, an anointing oil. So so I just really want to explore this connection with your grandmother and the kind of toxic-tasting elixir medicine that you had back then. So if you described your grandmother in three words, like her personality or approach to life, which three words would you choose?
I would say kind.
Mm-hmm.
The next two words that are coming to my mind are a total contradiction, because the first one was submissive, and then the next one was feisty.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So she was submissive sometimes and feisty at others.
Yeah.
Do you think, looking back as an adult, she might have always been feisty but played submissive sometimes?
Yeah, I think that would probably be accurate.
Okay. And a feisty woman might have fingernails that are kind of like, maybe not claw-like, but maybe kind of long and exciting and noticeable. Would that be a feisty woman's kind of hands, regardless
yes.
of your grandmother's actual hands?
You know what? She told me a story once that she used to ride a bus. I don't know where she was going, but she would ride a bus often. And she had a little pin. She was a seamstress. And when people kind of got too close or took over her seat, she would stick her little pin out. It'd be kind of welcome.
Was that as a child or as a grown person?
I think as a grown person.
What, has she passed now?
Yes.
Yeah. So we're free to talk about her.
Yes.
Okay. We've got a connection here with your grandmother now. I guess she didn't stick any of her pins in you when you went to stay. But maybe although she was very kind and loving towards you, maybe verbally you picked up on her feistiness, and maybe she sent some little barbs your way. Do you think she might have done while you were there?
I don't remember her doing that to me, but I know that although she was very kind, she did not let people walk all over her. She would make her opinions known.
Okay, now that makes sense. And the same way, you know, our actual fingernail, and I will put this properly with the dream later, but, you know, I sort of go in at whatever angle suits. Our fingernails on our hands, whether they're long or short or whatever, are biologically there to protect our fingertips. So, you know, our fingernails are about protecting the most sensitive tips of our fingers. And of course, when those fingernails are longer and they're more claw-like, you know, in a kind of animal instinctual nature, they're there to protect not just our fingertips, but to protect ourselves, you know, I'll get my grandmother's pin and stick it in you. So they're kind of like an ultra defensive thing. And, you know, when you were younger and you went to visit your grandmother, she was probably trying to teach you the things of don't let people walk all over you, stand up for yourself, be who you are, because that's quite strong in the dream too, about you wanting to be your authentic self. But she would have been teaching you those things and maybe trying to find a balance between being yourself gently and not letting people walk over you because, hey, you don't even expect people to walk over you. Why would they? That's kind of like the gentle end of the spectrum. And the kind of other end of the spectrum is where your grandmother might have been coming from originally, is that she may have had people walk all over her in her earlier life, or really grew up feeling that sense of vulnerability and so had to come out with her claws and her dressmaker pins at the ready. It's like, you know, and teaching her grandchildren, like, you know, now look, this life, people can walk all over you, so you must stand up for yourself and you must not let people, because it's been an issue for me and I'm going to make sure that we're going to be feisty and we're going to defend ourselves in this world. Whereas another person that had never experienced being walked over wouldn't even think to teach that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So to some extent, when you went to your grandmother's house, your grandmother was coming from the kindest and most loving part of her being and wanting to make sure that you, her grandchild, her granddaughter in particular, would grow up in a way that was strong and not allow other people to walk all over her. And she really put that lesson home. And it's possible that when you were often had tummy ache when you were at your grandmother's, that this was your response to that kind of this kind of lesson, you know, because stomach ache is often what we can't stomach around us at the time. So there may have been some part of you that either didn't like the idea of being walked all over, or feistiness, or something didn't quite gel. And it might be something else, but it's something around there. And so when you went to your grandmother's, you had this kind of, oh, I'm not sure about this. I can't quite stomach this or this feisty stick a pin in me kind of feeling. I've really got to go ahead in life and defend myself like that. Can't I just be lovely and gentle? And then, of course, she gave you the elixir medicine to help you out, but that tasted pretty toxic as well. So if we go to the dream now, and there was one part in the middle of the dream where you were at the toxic shampooist, the salon, and you walked outside and you tried to negotiate with them, and you said, well, look, you know, maybe this whole transformation deal would be more attractive to people if the shampoo wasn't as toxic, if you were more gentle. That was it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of already thinking here, because there's a connection through elixir with your childhood and your grandmother and the nails and the pins, that what you're saying at that part of the dream basically is, in order to go through a kind of transformation, whether, you know, just think personal development and spiritual transformation here, you know, normal growth and development, I'd rather, isn't there a gentle way to make a change in life? You know, can we be gentle? Can you, instead of sticking a pin in someone to make them move further away, can you engage them in conversation and, you know, or can you move yourself? Is there a gentle way to negotiate other than use a pin or a long nail or a whatever? And you're making that appeal in the dream. It's an appeal for gentleness, you know? But they don't like that. And they basically say, no, the way through is to be one of us, to have the nails. Your special power is going to be the nails.
Something you said earlier that just sparked a memory, because I thought about this dream for months and months trying to figure out the different elements. And I was thinking about the part of the shampoo, because in the future dream, some other water on the head theme showed up. And the word that came to me was baptism. You know, when you're baptized, it's supposed to symbolize the old one is gone, the new one is here. So I think you said something about elixir as a balm or something that just kind of sparked that thought.
Yeah, that's right. I think I called it an anointing, because it just felt like that, the way they put the shampoo, even though it was toxic shampoo, it felt like an anointing. And elixir is often an oil which you use for anointing. So, yeah, well done. You made a great connection with that, with a future dream. So, yeah, a baptism is about, you know, moving. It is a rebirth, really, isn't it? It's a celebration of a rebirth. It's a moving forward. It's a transformation. And you had in the dream, you know, you were there was a religious element to an extent because you were calling on God to protect you to not be fully like the mutants at the end of the dream.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a set of dates on a board there. Did you say they were religious dates or just dates on which you couldn't use your superpowers?
I think they were religious dates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a kind of religious theme there too. It's almost like on these dates you can't use your superpowers, which, you know, as you described in the dream, were kind of pretty evil, really. And you were protected on those dates, so there was a kind of religious protection there. You don't remember any of the dates, do you, Andrea?
I don't. I want to say things like Christmas. They were probably Christian holidays because I come from a very strong Christian background. But I don't remember anything more specific than that.
Okay, so there was they very probably were Christian dates, and on those days, evil with the nails could not be performed. So there was a sense of protection there. Even though you fully transformed, actually you didn't. You held back a bit, and you, as you said in the dream, your feeling was that being short meant you'd was a private symbol to you. That although you looked like you changed on the outside, you were still your true self inside, and you felt protected by God in that sense. And kind of like to an extent, either holding on to your religion or holding on to some essence of your beliefs there that didn't go through the whole transformation procedure. So was your grandmother a strong Christian?
She was. She was very private about it. She didn't talk a whole lot about it, but the image that I have of her is being very a woman of faith.
A woman of faith, yeah. And you're still a strong woman of faith yourself?
Yes.
Yes, okay. That's just really important to know all these details. There's one part in the dream where you dropped into unconsciousness, passed out because of the toxic stuff they were putting on you.
Yeah.
And then further in the dream, you actually sort of came out of that coma and were awakened within the dream. Now, often when you pass out in a dream or you become unconscious, that part of the dream is often highlighting something that is deeply unconscious to you. Like, you know, there's most of the dream is about your unconscious mind, but when you then pass out within the dream, it's like, yeah, look, this stuff is really deeply unconscious. And then when you wake up from that, it can sometimes, in the dream, it can be sometimes an awakening to what has been deeply unconscious to you. And they told you in the dream that while you were unconscious, I think you said you killed babies and children.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you quite rightly said, well, look, if I was unconscious, you know, I can't really be blamed for that, can I? I didn't know what I was doing. Now, killing in a dream, it just means like ending something or killing it off. And babies and children in a dream don't mean real babies and children. They mean, you know, in your life, things that are new in your life can often be represented as babies, or, you know, children that are maybe 3 or 5 years old can represent things that have been in your life for 3 or 5 years. So babies and children can be things in your life. So to have killed these off suggests that at the time of your dream, you had somehow maybe had a history of starting things that's like the babies and then killing them off, like finishing them, no more of that. And then, you know, or starting things and they lasted a few years. They became like children, but then they ended as well. And if you go right to the end of your dream, at the end of the dream, it's like, oh, I've had enough of this. I'm out of here, which is kind of like an abandonment of the project as well. And there was also that theme through the dream where you said, look, I'm going along with this, you know, agreeing to become one of them because it's for my sort of protection. But I'm going to delay this as long as possible. And you were using lots of delay tactics, as many as you could, to get out of it, weren't you?
Yeah.
Right. So any kind of delaying tactic, stopping us from getting somewhere, it's kind of can be like a saboteur. If there's something in life we do actually really, really want consciously, but unconsciously we don't, we actually make really sure that we never get there because our unconscious mind comes in and throws up obstacles in the way. Right. And that's a little bit like in your dream where it's when, you know, they said, oh, while you're unconscious, you killed all these babies and children. And you said, well, you know, I can't be responsible for that. That to me comes out as there's a unconscious part of you that, stops, or back 3 years ago, stopped projects or new things in life pretty quickly, but you were totally unaware that you know, it would have felt to you like, damn, you know, I keep starting things and they keep just sort of petering out to nothing, or they keep stopping on me. And the dream was like, yeah, well, I know you can't feel responsible for this because you don't know about it, but actually it's you. So there's that kind of feeling there in the dream.
Okay.
And then also because the dream, the bit that you do know about in the dream is that I'm putting delays in things that, to sort of put this off as long as possible. So that's a kind of more of a conscious saboteur. You know, you probably 3 years ago had a situation where, because of the dream, you know, the dream is reflecting a situation where people required something of you that you were kind of going along with, but because for some reason it felt like it was for your own safety. And a lot of the dream was about hiding, you know, you were hiding behind pillars or people were hiding, things were hiding. So it was more like the situation in your life 3 years ago would have been something like someone requires you to change into some way and to become like them, you know, to take on their beliefs. But you think, I kind of feel forced into doing this. I kind of feel there's no way out, but maybe I can kind of go through it and make it look like I'm doing that. But really I'll be hiding my true self behind that. And I'll try as long as possible to keep off the whole process of going along with what they want anyway, because I can do that by kind of trying to delay things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, you know, what they required of you, or what you had kind of decided to go along with, was something that felt like a whole new thing and required this kind of anointing process, but really you didn't want to go there. And one of the reasons you didn't want to go there was because you would have to go through or suffer what felt like to you very toxic, what felt like taking on new ideas and new thoughts, because the head is where we keep our thoughts, and the hair, you could say, grows from our head. It's like the ideas that we grow. And you were shaven head and had this toxic shampoo put on. So it was almost like you felt that all your old ideas were going to be taken away. It was going to be painful and toxic. Mm-hmm. Unfamiliar ideas were going to be reimplanted. There's a lot more to say, but Andrea, how are we going so far?
We are spot on. And can I share with you now what was going on with me at that time, or do you want to keep going?
No, I'd love to know, please.
Okay, sure. I had started a business, and up until that point, I had been, you know, a people pleaser. I was terrified of offending people, and I made a significant effort to transform myself and to become more assertive, even aggressive if I needed to be, because I had to confront a lot of people. I had to hire and fire and just really work on being firm and direct with people. Shortly after starting the business, within the first year, I sold it to another company, but I remained on board as an employee. And that was, you know, I was able to share the burden of the business. So it was a big relief in that aspect. But then I didn't agree with the way that the business was being managed. So there was a lot of conflict of, oh, that is so not how I would do things. I don't think this is the right decision, but I'll have to go along with it. So that's what was going
on. Spot on. So then there were several things in the dream where, for example, where you thought, oh, look, if I have to do this, I'll just go for, you know, the most evil aspects, kill off the most evil people. So was there a sense in the business then, when you were in that position, where you thought, okay, there's so much of this that I don't disagree with, but maybe I'll just start with the, you know, with the most toxic aspects of that? Did you kind of make that decision at the time of the dream?
Yeah, that's not crystal clear to me right now, but I think I was thinking, I can't just disagree about everything. I have to pick my battles and voice my opinion on the things that I think are critical.
Yeah, so that does relate to going for the most evil, you know. And as you said in the dream, I can kind of do that. Like, I feel confident and justified in doing that. And you got that beautiful juxtaposition in the dream, almost two opposites. You know, one is to is to go for the most evil, go for the most critical, as you've said, the most critical aspects, and not keep quiet about those, and go for those. And there's the other part in the dream where you were pleading with them and saying, well, can we do this gently, and does it have to be so toxic? So that's more the kind of peace win-win negotiator. So at the time of the dream, you were probably actually kind of working out for yourself, which way do I go? Do I go more for peaceful negotiation, although the feeling in the dream like that was actually, it was kind of too late for that. They were already throwing the toxic stuff over you. So, okay, I'm going to go for the most evil. And then at the end of the dream, it turned out that you did actually for a moment consider the dork, going for the dork.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'll ask you a specific question about that in a minute. And then you kind of basically threw your hands up in the air and said, oh, look, I'm out of here. So I kind of would suspect that the bottom line of the dream, which was even though you were transformed and you had your name, the bottom line of the dream being, I'm bored with this, I'm out of there, probably related to a thought or a feeling of, look, I think I'll just leave the whole business, either physically and fiscally or emotionally just let it go. But the dork, I mean, was the dork, when you think about the dork in the bookshop now, did he look a little bit like somebody or feel like somebody that you were dealing with then?
His face didn't look the same, but I think his overall appearance probably had the feel of the person who purchased the business from me. It kind of reminds me of that same... probably the same personality. So,
okay. So in the dream, you had this feeling of I could easily go for him, but I'm over this. So maybe one of the critical, although early in the dream you thought you could go for the more critical issues, which were represented like by the evil, the most evil. Mm-hmm. But he was kind of benign, a dork, and you thought, and so that part of the dream was, well, I could easily just maybe go address everything through him. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of bored. I'm out of here. Now, because he gave you eye contact in the dream, and this is a tough bit, when you have everyone in a dream, even though they represent, even though you can relate to them as other people, like you can relate to that dorky character as the person that bought out your business, mm-hmm. everyone in a dream also represents something about you. So that's not to say that you're dorky or that you were dorky, although you may have been. but it does say that dorkiness was an issue for you. So at some level in your life, you either felt like a dork and made sure that you weren't, or you definitely, or you did feel dorky sometimes, or, dorkiness was an issue, and that's why you recognized it in him. Because when you have eye-to-eye contact in a dream, it's almost like, when you say the eyes are the windows to the soul, or the EYE is like the capital I, because dreams do wordplay too. Eye-to-eye contact is like that part of the dream, you met a part of yourself face on. Mm. And that is interesting because it was that part of the dream where you basically thought, I'm bored with this. That means the emotional intensity is gone. Yeah. I'm out of here. I'm over it. So there was something, a clue there in the dream of all the intensity that had gone into your feelings after you sold the business and everything that happened and all the toxic stuff and all of that. It was suddenly in this moment, I get something from this. I get something about myself by looking at this dorky character. And suddenly my emotional intensity about this is gone. I'm over it. Now, how would you respond to that?
A couple of thoughts. One is I look very young for my age, and I'm small, so I was always very self-conscious about dealing with, these older successful businessmen. I wanted to make a big impression, and a couple of times, many years ago, I always got mistaken for an intern because I looked so young. And when I was starting the business, sometimes I got those comments, oh, but you look so young, you're such a cute little girl. And I wanted to be taken seriously as a businesswoman. So that was a challenge. And about being bored, I eventually did kind of give up on it. I said, I sold the business. I'm just not going to care anymore. I'm just going to do what I'm told. I give up. So yeah, that's what brings to mind.
That makes a lot of sense then. So that if you sidestep that and think, okay, a person that looks young, aren't you lucky? A person that looks young. was your grandmother small as well?
She was.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a person that is female and also small and also young can sometimes feel extra vulnerable, as you've just described very well, and therefore sometimes feel that they need to protect themselves even more. Not necessarily protect as in get the nails out or get the hat pin out, but protect as in protect your identity as an equal to mm-hmm. other powerful people around you. And so, it may be even a stronger vulnerability, maybe a stronger issue for someone like you who looks younger and is smaller, and maybe at the time lacked some level of confidence, even though you obviously had a wonderful business to sell, that brought up all the issues of, as your grandmother said, don't let people walk all over you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's lovely at the end of the dream that there is some sense that you connect with that when you get the eye to eye contact. You absolutely connect with that. You connect with, in a sense, maybe they don't see me as dorky, but they see me as young, because you earlier, I think, described dorky. He was like dorky means young as well. Yeah. So that you connected with almost got an aha over it. It's like, okay, I get it. It's just because I think that I'm young, and I think that that they're treating me, that they think that I'm young, that they think that I'm vulnerable, and this is what's bringing up all these fears in me, and what's bringing up the feeling to need to protect myself. And that's where all the kind of passionate intensities coming from here. That's why I think to some extent they're entitled to walk all over me. There's an unconscious part that goes, yeah, walk all over me. I'm small, I'm vulnerable, I'm out here to please people. You said that earlier, I'm out here to please mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
And at that moment in the dream, it kind of diffused it, because you saw that. You thought, okay, it kind of like, is that all it is really? I'm over this. my prediction is that you probably moved on from that point to for that issue to really kind of shrink to almost nothing. Did you move on from there to actually get a nice balanced kind of feeling now about your place in the world and about your kind of not needing to be super protected, not feeling super vulnerable, but just feeling sort of pretty equal? Is that how it turned out for you?
Yes. It's taken me a while to figure out what it is that I want to do and who I want to be, but I think I have a pretty good idea now, and I do feel confident. I don't have a problem now addressing whatever issues need to be addressed. Occasionally there is a bit of fear that comes up, a little hesitation. But overall, I'm a more direct person than I used to be.
Oh, that's really fantastic. So it all worked out well for you in the end. And because there was the religious thing there too, is that just in the dream, do you think that was just a reflection of your authentic self? Or did you feel judged by other people for being a strong Christian? As in, did you feel vulnerable about that too? That they said, "Oh, she's a Christian." Was that in the dream because of this theme of religion in the dream?
I think there was probably some inner conflict about being humble and living out, those values, and just being a very pleasant person. And then, how do you balance that with being firm and standing up for yourself and even being a little aggressive if you need to be. So I think just trying to find that happy medium. And also the business that I started had a religious element to it. So there was a lot of that was weaved into the business.
All right, yeah. Well, that all makes a huge amount of sense. So just going back over some elements of your dream, because I didn't actually formally go and interpret it, which I had just little nips at it. For anybody listening that may be puzzled about some of the elements, they were mutants. They weren't aliens, really. They were mutants, weren't they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So, and you described them as
half human, half demon.
Half human.
Because the demon personified the aggressiveness
that
I was trying to incorporate in my life.
Yeah, you've got it. It's perfect. So that, you know, a mutant is a change. So this was the change that you were required to make, and it was to become in that change to actually take on the aggressive, what you saw as aggressive qualities. You know, exactly as you've just perfectly identified there, and as we've been talking about, and to an extent that was your demon. You know, that when we talk about our demons, we're talking about our fears or those inner unconscious voices. You know, that the demon, for all your grandmother's love and kindness, kind of implanted into you. You've got to watch other people. You've got to get your pins out, or they'll walk all over you. So the mutants were based in a city.
I grew up just in the middle of a city in South America, so it did have a lot of the same feel as where I grew up. And I did live in an apartment building for a long time, so it seems to take me back a little to my
And would that be taking you back to about the time that you used to go to your grandmother as well?
Yeah,
it's really interesting, that, isn't it? That so when there's any symbol, particularly buildings that relate to way back in our past, the dream is then often saying this is the origin of the issue or belief or whatever it is that's unconscious in you that is pertinent at the moment, that is an issue for you. So it takes you back. And I love the way how you said, Andrea, that like the buildings weren't exactly like that, but it was reminiscent, just like the dorky man was reminiscent, you know. And it's often really important to do that, to look at a dream symbol and think, I don't actually know this, but it reminds me of. And so to get that feeling of, yes, it reminds me of the city in South America where I was brought up, it reminds me of my childhood, is definitely taking that issue, you know, right back then. And in a sense, you might say that your grandmother, again, for all good intentions from where she was coming from, was also to some extent requiring you to be a mutant, to change in a way that incorporated the demon with the long nails. Yeah, I don't need to give you my pins because you're going to have nails and special talents of your own. Yeah. Or even special talons of your own, maybe. What else, because we've just about done the dream, but is there something I'm missing, Andrea, like a symbol from the dream that you think it would be good to cover?
Oh, let me see. Do you have any thoughts on the height? You know, how the mutants were very tall. Does that say anything to you?
Yeah, that was really interesting because it was funny when you mentioned that in the dream and you said that you saw that as a sign that although you looked like them outwardly, you were still yourself inside. And, you know, and I and everyone listening is going, but you didn't look like them because you were small. So it was kind of like, oh, yeah, you look like them. The feeling I get from that was that, with the issue at the end where you said, actually, I am quite a small person and I have felt that to be a challenge before. So I think it was relating to that. You were prepared to go quite a long way in the dream to become like them. But, yeah, in a sense, you weren't prepared to give up your delicacy, your youth, and your vulnerability to an extent, which you see as, or not now, but back then you saw as part of being small. And it may also just represent not fully growing into the mutant demon that was required of you, kind of holding something back, stunting it maybe, being small in that way. But definitely not identifying with them, even though you kind of look like them. Did you get something else from that?
No, I think that makes perfect sense. And I'm trying to think of all the other details of the dream, but I think you've addressed all of them.
Isn't it wonderful how a dream can be quite a long dream, and almost you wake up and think, I really should make a novel or a movie out of this? You know, which would be good. But how when you can often look at a long dream and it's actually kind of like a recurring theme, you know, just looking at it from different angles and exploring it from different angles, you know, the same thing. So if we were to move on to give you a dream alchemy practice, which you do not need now, so this is just theoretical, you know, this is 3 years down the track and you don't need this. You've already, you know, waking life over that 3 years has taught you what you need to know. And to some extent at the end of the dream, it's like, I'm out of here. You kind of got it already then. But just for completion and for everyone listening in to sort of understand the alchemy process, how would we have worked with that? We would have identified that you don't really need the special talents or the special talons to defend yourself, that you're perfect as you are. And we probably would have worked on the let's do the gentle approach of gentle negotiation rather than killing killing the really evil people.
Okay.
Because even in dream alchemy, you know, this sounds like an aside, but it's relevant. If you've got a child and the child dreams of being chased by a monster, that will often come up for a lot of children because it's like the monster is something they're frightened of, and so they're running away from it. And it's normal as a child to grow, and there's lots of frightening things in the world that you don't want to face. And what you say to a child at a time like that is, next time you have the dream, because they can't do the alchemy, so you kind of make a suggestion for next time they have the dream, and children are really good at taking on a suggestion. And you say to them, next time you have the dream, just turn around and look at the monster and go, oh, look, you're not a monster. You're a beautiful angel or teddy bear or whatever feels good to the child, and they go up and they hug the not the monster, and it will usually mean that in waking life they are then far less fearful of the thing that they're frightened of. So it's like an example of alchemy happening in a dream, and what you get from that is the essence that when you do alchemy, you don't kill off a monster, because if you kill off something, like you put an end to something in your life, it leaves a hole. So it leaves like a hole in the psyche. You always transform a bad element into a dream, into a good element, so that you transform an old belief that's not working for you into a new one that is. And so in your dream, there's a feeling there too, when, you know, there was a one approach in your dream as, oh, I could just sort of kill off the evil element, or I could negotiate. That's kind of like the good side of it. And you didn't really have the opportunity at work. But if you had at the time, I think I would have given you the alchemy practice of starting in the dream where you walked out of the salon and saying to them, look, you know, I think there's a better way. People would be more inclined to go with you if you didn't go through this whole toxic shampoo kind of thing. And then in that alchemy thing for them to go, you know, you are so right. And then we'd do a visualization where they gave you some kind of beautiful, soothing, wonderful shampoo, and that as they put that on your head, you actually grew into feelings of utter and complete confidence that people walking over you just wasn't an issue, so why would you need to be defensive about it?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we would work on that level, and that would have accelerated the process that you then naturally went through, you know, over the 3 years after that dream, to find that point where you realize that it's only when you realize that it's only when you fear that people are going to walk all over you that you kind of send out that message, walk all over me, walk all over me, walk all over me. Oh, dear, I better defend myself. If that doesn't even enter your mind, why would anyone walk over me? Then it's not an issue, so you don't need to protect either. We would have worked out an alchemy along those lines. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah, it does. It does. Mm. You nailed it.
in a gentle kind of way.
Yeah.
Look, Andrea, thank you so much for sharing that dream. It was huge, and it was really, really lovely. And I'm sure, you know, by sharing with us a lot of the details of what was happening for you at the time of the dream, you really help people listening in to be able to see how a dream does relate to waking life and to the issues in it. And it's really interesting, isn't it, that when you can go back into your past, particularly with any kind of body-mind symptoms, and we've done this on some recent podcasts, I can't call to mind exactly which ones at the moment, but where people have indicated, oh, yes, in waking life I've got like a stomach ache that you had as a child, or, you know, some part of the body, that we can go back and say, you know, where in your waking life has this body pain or disease or whatever been an issue for you, and we've been able to tie that into the dream as well. So you kind of opened up all that stuff for us too, which was just really lovely.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
thank you for being on the show. It was great.
Thanks.
I'm sure that you enjoyed that. And listen, thank you so much to everybody for, I've had so many emails from people thanking me for the show It's wonderful that you can stick the show on your headphones and walk around and do other things at the same time. But yeah, a lot of emails, particularly over the past few months, from people saying they're learning so much from listening to the episodes and being able to apply it to their own dreams and come up with a lot of enlightenment. So I'm delighted. That is the purpose of the show. Every guest comes on the show hoping not only to get enlightenment and help for themselves, but, you know, really, liking the thought of sharing their message to help other people. So that's absolutely fabulous that that's all happening. For those of you that are interested on a more professional level, you know, you might be already working as a dream analyst. You might be working as a therapist. You might be working in psychology, any of those avenues, or you just might be thinking about working with clients. Do check out my website, because I do have, of course, a professional training course by which you can become a master dream analyst and dream alchemist and say that you've been trained by me. It is a 40-week course, and the thing that people really enjoy about it is the hands-on component. So it can be one thing, as you know, listening and learning and acquiring tools and applying them to your own dream. And it can be another thing actually working hands-on with people and knowing the techniques to go in and how to work with people on their dreams. So if that kind of interests you, the practical component, have a look at my website, have a look at that course. It is a one-on-one course. Wherever you are in the world, and it's specifically designed as one-on-one and kept as one-on-one so that I can discuss every detail with you of how you're going with your volunteer clients or how you're going with your real clients and really hold your hand every step of the way so that I can teach you to work with people in the ways that I do. Kind of shortcut to the 19, nearly 20 years it's taken me to get here that you can absorb in 40 weeks. For everyone else, just remember there's loads of free resources at my website, www.dream.net.au, as well as my personal services and my blog at www.janetheresa.com. And of course, for interaction on the Facebook page. So thanks, everyone. Have a fantastic week. Watch out for the mutants. I'll see you next week for another episode of The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson.
If you've had a dream you'd like interpreted on this program, send your email to thedreamshow@lifestylepodnetwork.com. You can also follow Jane on Twitter at twitter.com/dreamsite. The Dream Show is a production of Dreamsite Corporation for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one at lifestylepodnetwork.com.